do is give you an example of how you do not give a presentation. So I'm going to try and get as many things wrong as I can. And your job is not to interrupt me and say, stop, that's boring. Your job is to listen along and see if you can spot what I'm doing wrong. So this presentation is actually on my laptop. Sorry. Which I have to do. Sorry. Come on. Right. Sorry, I need the dongle. Right. Does anybody have one of the things that connects this to a machine? No. I've got a USB stick. I'll just do it off this machine, okay? Just log in here. Can't believe I left the dongle at my office. I suppose I could go back and get it. Just talk among yourselves. Come on. Oh, apparently I'm supposed to be in a research skills lecture. There it is. Right, that's done on the dongle. So this goes in. Good, we're ready to go. Right. Okay, this is, before I start, I should say that this is a talk. I didn't prepare this talk specifically for this class. I prepared it for my research group a couple of years ago, and I was going to edit it for you guys, but basically I ran out of time. So some of the slides won't be quite relevant to this class, but sorry, we'll do that. So let's get going. I'm Neil Dodge, and I'm the guy who's giving this talk. Okay. Oh yeah, thanks to Alan Blackwell. Alan's the guy who inspired me to do this. And actually, Alan's just been to New Zealand on sabbatical for 9 months, where he was doing some work on programming, and just living in this really isolated part of New Zealand, doing programming and not connected to the internet. And he's back now, and we're pleased to have him back. Anyway, enough about Alan. Let's get on how papers are reviewed. So reviewing is a central part of the scientific process. Criticism and analysis of papers by other scientists, that's spelled wrong. By other scientists is the main mechanism for identifying good research and eliminating bad research. Reviewing is arguably as important an activity as research itself. Writing a review. When you're asked to write a review, you're expected to be fair, neither too harsh nor too easy on purpose. Objective, assessing the work on its own merits. Not swayed by your own bias, current fashion in the field, your personal opinion of the authors, if you've been told who the authors are. Writing a review continued. You should maintain confidentiality. Do not pass copies of the paper around your research group unless you've been given permission to do that. Don't publish work on papers you have reviewed. Avoid conflicts of interest. Mm-hmm. Do not review papers by people you're working with or by people who you have worked with recently. Up to 3 years ago, but you should use your common sense. And yes, review quickly, by which I mean within a few weeks. Well, the editor will give you a time scale on that. So here's an example of how to do a review for Eurographics. Eurographics is the European Graphics Organization. I suppose that's pretty clear. And it's an organization I work with. So when you do a review for Eurographics, it has several parts. Let's go through those. First of all, you have to summarize the paper. Then you'll be asked to score it on various criteria. And the criteria you have to score it on are originality, novelty, importance and utility, technical soundness, reproducibility, are the references complete? Is the presentation clear, and is it suitable for the event? And when you've done that, you have to give an overall score. And then on the right-hand side of the slide, there's some more textual stuff you have to do. You have to provide detailed comments to the authors. And you also should provide confidential comments for the editor or the program committee. And those are comments that are confidential, but you don't want the authors to read. That's why they're confidential. And what's happening there? What do I get? Okay. And you need to estimate your confidence in your evaluation. Which reminds me, this bottom point here. When I say the editor should give you a timescale, of course, if you're reviewing for a conference like Eurographics, then the problem is that there will be a timescale. There will be a timescale already set. The editor won't give it to you. It will be a timescale that's been set by the conference people in advance, and you need to stick to that timescale. And it's not true to say the editor will give you one, but it will still be a few weeks. But if it's a journal, then the editor will give you a timescale, and you should review within that timescale. And lots of people don't, but you should, okay? Anyway, Right. Moving on. So what do you have to do? So this is what is this? Yeah, okay, this is Eurographics 2005. I was on the program committee for this. That's what PC stands for. And it was in Dublin, and there's a photo of Dublin. That's Trinity College Dublin. That's my wife and daughter in the photo. And it's really cool. We went to Dublin, it's quite fun. We had a lovely time. And we also did some work, of course. So we had this two-day program committee meeting. That's the program committee meeting at the top, not quite so much fun as the bottom photo. So, I wanted this to be an example of how you review papers if you're on a committee. So, each paper was reviewed by these four people. So, senior reviewer from the PC, that's program committee, not personal computer, and three externals. Each reviewer wrote a review and scored the paper in a range of 0 to 9, and two PC members gave a draft decision of accept, discuss, or that's supposed to say reject, but the J's got chopped off, so it's not react, it's reject. So then, in the photo, you'll see on the screen, there's our web up there, there's what paper we're discussing, what the status is, and whether there are any conflicts of interest. There's copies of the paper on paper so that we can read them, and we're connected to the internet so that we can check prior art. Okay, so that's the overall process. Now, you probably want to know more about the details. So, this is the procedure the program committee followed. First of all, we discussed the top 20. Well, we haven't got time to mention this stuff. So I'll just skip to how we scored things. So this is how the decisions were made. There are the scores across the bottom, average score for each paper from 0 to 8. And you can see that some people who scored 4 were still accepted. They were very lucky. And some people who scored 6 were rejected. They were very unlucky. But in the middle, there was a lot of discussion. So, thank you very much. So let's look at what went wrong. So first of all, check the technology before you start. So if you're working from a laptop, have it up and running with a presentation going before you walk up the front. Ensure, before the session even starts, that you can actually connect the technology to the machine, and that it works. And you all know computers, you know that even if you've checked it works, just occasionally, the technology still fails. Which means have a backup on a USB key before you even start, just in case your laptop fails, so you can borrow somebody else's. So in an emergency, have your emergency backup ready to go. So that's the technology side. What you want to do is when you stand up, everything starts beautifully and nothing gets in the way of your lovely presentation. All the technology just is perfect. Now let's look at the talk. So I tried to put as much stupidity into this talk as I could. So first of all, this slide has a phenomenally cluttered layout. I've seen tighter slides like this where they've tried to throw every logo and every thing possible onto the title slide. and it just looks awful. There are too many logos. The University of Cambridge logo and the Computer Graphics Forum are in such low quality, they're all blurry and horrible. I mean, how embarrassing to come for a talk from the University of Cambridge, go to give a talk, and you can't even get a good copy of the university's logo. There were also on this slide some unnecessary animations. You don't use animation unless absolutely necessary. And then I said something wrong. I said sorry. I apologise that this was a presentation that I prepared for somebody else. Even if that's true, and supposing it's true that you just pulled something out of the back pocket to give, don't tell them. Make them think that this was prepared especially for them. Don't tell stories about your co-authors. Last year we had somebody who spent 10 minutes before his talk telling stories about all the people who'd co-authored the paper with him. It was very interesting for him. So, with a title slide, it should say, title, your name, your affiliation, and you move on to the next slide as quickly as possible. Now, for the next three slides, I did all those things which you have probably seen in bad lectures. I read out just what was on the slides, and it leaves the audience thinking, well, why did I bother coming? I could read it myself much quicker. You'll also notice I managed to nest this all the way down to the limit that PowerPoint allows. I have five levels of nesting. You just don't do that. You should have one or two levels of nesting. So what you should be doing is not having lots of text. So it's very easy when you prepare a presentation to open your favorite presentation tool, whatever your presentation tool is, and start typing in what you're going to say. So this is, in fact, typing in exactly the words I'm going to say. And what you should have is some minimal text, some diagrams, little memory jogging bits of text with the key points, and then what you say expands on those little bits of text. So these slides could probably have been compressed into one slide of a few key points. I hadn't spell checked. I didn't once look at you. In fact, I turned my back on you at one point and talked to the screen. And do speak as if you're interested. I don't think I managed this in the presentation. It's very hard for me to talk as if it's the most boring thing in the world to be standing in front of you giving this talk. But if you talk like this, the audience starts to think, well, if he doesn't want to be here, why am I here? But if the person at the front talks as if this is really exciting, really makes them happy to be here and telling you about this thing that makes them so excited, it starts to make the audience just feel that there must be something interesting because at least one person in the room thinks it's interesting. Now this slide had that bane of many slides, lots of unnecessary animation, things bouncing in. There were sound effects. Don't ever use sound effects. And I said, don't use unnecessary animation. Sometimes animation can be used to make a point when you're building up a picture of something very complicated and you need to build it up piece by piece. That can be useful, but don't overdo it, and certainly don't do it for flying text in. In fact, having the whole lot on the screen would have been no problem, and when I gave you this talk on Monday, I just had the whole lot on the screen, and you could look at it, and it gave you both an idea of what was coming, and it also let you know how much you had to listen to before we got to the next slide. And you'll notice I forgot something on the previous slide, so I went back. And you should rehearse your talks sufficiently well that you know what you're going to say, so you don't have to unnecessarily go backwards and forwards because you've forgotten something. You should not forget anything. And so if you ever go backwards, it should be deliberate. Now, embarrassingly, this slide is based on two slides you saw on Monday. But I think the way I did this on Monday worked better. Whether it's good or not is actually up for judgment. But this is certainly too crowded. There's some unnecessary logos at the top. We need those. There's far too much text. Even though it's in note form, there's just too much. This should be broken up over two slides. Those pictures are tiny. You can't see any detail in them. And so make the pictures as big as you possibly can so people can see the detail. There is no need to have a picture of my wife and daughter, even though you can't actually see them. And the animation on those little yellow rings coming in on the picture was actually slowed down considerably from the version on Monday in order to make the point that sometimes animation works, but you've got to make sure that it's quick and snappy. Then this is another bane of presentations, a slide with lots of stuff on it. The presenter throws it up, and you think, oh my goodness, I've got to read that. You start reading, and you go, oh, well, this isn't really important, and go straight on to the next one. So, no way should you ever have a slide that the audience cannot read before you go on to the next one. And you should actually have rehearsed it enough to know that, first of all, this has way too much information in it. Secondly, the audience don't need to read all this. And thirdly, you certainly shouldn't have a slide that you're not going to talk about. Then I took the lovely, clean graphs that I thought they were lovely graphs that I used on Monday, and I tried to make an incomprehensible version of the same data. So this is exactly the same data you got on Monday, presented in a much less accessible manner. I never explained what it was. There's way too much text to read. And even if you read it, you still haven't really got an idea of what's going on here. I've forgotten the typos in this. Decisions. That just shows you did this so quickly you couldn't even bother to go and check it. And discussion, you'll see discuss ion. It's very embarrassing to have a word split over two lines, but even worse when the split actually comes and makes two words that really exist. And finally, just no. No matter how much you love dancing hamsters, never use them in a technical presentation, or indeed, ever. And the other mistake, and this is more subtle, the final slide of your presentation is going to be sitting on the screen for the whole question and answer session. But the last slide of your presentation will be the one that is on the screen for the longest. So having the words thank you is not very helpful. You may be very grateful to the audience for giving up their time to listen to you, but you actually should have something useful on there. So, useful things you can have are a one-line summary of the key point you were trying to make, your contact details, because if you've done a good job, they'll want to contact you. So, name, email address, a website where they can go and get more information, because some of the audience may be a bit shy and just want to go and get the information without actually bothering you. And then if you like, the words thank you, because you may be very grateful to the audience and think it's polite to thank them, so yes, add the words thank you, or add the words any questions.